Are you ready to be best dressed for less? At Matalan, we've got must-have dresses for £20 and under when you shop in-store, via the app or online. So whatever your style, pick a dress, or two, or even three today. Find your nearest Matalan or discover more online at matalan.co.uk.
Everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce back for another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. We are rolling through our kind of state of the organizations. We're looking at the farm systems combined with a little bit of what the major leagues look like for all 30 teams. If you haven't already listened to the AL East, the AL Central podcast, those are already up on the Baseball America feed, also on the YouTube channel, and which is just Baseball America on youtube.com/Baseball America. So if you haven't checked those out, I would recommend checking those out first. But hey, if you're just an A's fan or an Astros fan or a Rangers fan or whatever, you're just checking out this one, we also understand that. But Jeff, good to be back together. Good to continue talking about the state of the systems as we kind of roll through all 30 teams.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first couple of shows were definitely exciting, you know, going through system by system. It's always fun to kind of break them down and go through our, you know, personal opinions on some of these players and some of the things that we've noticed, observed, and obviously heard through our reporting.
But and this is all that we were just lamenting, the fact that I think this is a lot of what we're getting to do this week, because especially being based in North Carolina, I think the forecast here is 10 inches of rain over the next 5 days. So not going to be a whole lot of baseball going on in person anywhere here. And I think you're getting quite wet in the Cape as well as you try to catch up the last days of the Cape Cod League season.
Yeah, exactly. It's not been a cooperative weather this summer for sure. I feel like I've had more rainouts and postponements and et cetera than I've had, you know, in years, or maybe even like years combined.
Well, we're just going to dive into it. So we're going through alphabetical for each division. So we will start this off with the Houston Astros. Obviously, Houston was pretty busy at the deadline. The Yusei Kikuchi deal, they paid a high price, but at the same time, his first start was really excellent. He does provide them something that they clearly need, a little bit more starting pitching depth. But Jeff, as the person who does our Astros top 30, you're the one who kind of stays up with them on the most intense level all year. When you look at this Astros system right now, it's thin. Is my assessment one that matches yours, or am I selling them a little bit short?
No, I don't think it's an awful top 10. I think there's players, especially in the top five, you got a bunch of position guys that I think you can look a few years down the road and say, like, this guy can be an everyday regular. You know, even Zach DiZenzo, I know that he was a hot name last year, started the season on the injured list for a good chunk of the year. Since he's come back, I think he's made a couple of hot sheets since he's been up in AA. AAA, the numbers have been pretty good. He's a guy that maybe comes into the mix next year. Jacob Melton has been sort of a back-end top 100 guy for us for a better part of a year now. Bryce Matthews is tooled up and interesting. Walter Yannick, their recent first-round pick, is one of the better defensive catchers in the draft. And the questions on him is how much is he going to hit? And then Luis Baez is an exciting power prospect that's kind of up and down at times. I think that the narrative with the system, though, is year after year, they churn out a couple of guys that are somewhere in the mix from 10 to 30 that turn into better big leaguers than we may anticipate. It may not be at the rate that it was 5 or 6 years ago, but there's always like a Ronel Blanco or someone like that kind of lurking within the system. So I think it's one of those systems where you got to pay attention to it. There's no easy answers often after like 4 or 5, but there might be some sneaky big leaguers in here. But in terms of system rankings and that sort of thing, that doesn't help a whole lot in terms of where their standing is when you lay it out against the other, you know, 29 clubs.
The thing I look at right now is, and this is not really a criticism at this point, because what the Astros have done over the last decade, this is a team that has been a playoff contender. I think this, if they make it this year, I think that'll be 9 playoff appearances in 10 years, obviously a pair of World Series, titles in there, and Yes, I hear thousands of podcast listeners saying, but Spygate and all that. But whatever you want to say about all that, the Astros have been one of the best teams in the American League for a decade now. I do kind of feel like that, not that the end is coming, but I do feel like that it's going to get a lot tougher for them. This year's been tougher for them. Let's just be honest. Like, this has been more of a slog. But when you look at Alex Bregman hitting free agency, next year, Kyle Tucker, his last year before Kyle Tucker is free agency. Framber Valdez, Luis Garcia are getting they have players who are going from young stars to kind of the peaks and then kind of like the middle of their careers, some of which they're retaining, some of which are going to hit free agency. And then you also have stars like Jose Altuve, who's been a star for them for a very long time now, who's, still a very good player, but is headed towards the tail end of his career. Is this a team that is kind of set up to sustain this for a while longer, in your opinion, or is the end coming in the next year or two?
Yeah, I think if you look at this team, they lack the depth that they had a few years ago. Looking at an Astros lineup and saying, like, maybe not 1-9, but 1-7 is really scary, is no longer the case. There's been some mismanagement at the MLB level, giving Jose Abreu a big contract when he was definitely on the back nine. I think a lot of teams knew that. And they had to eat a lot of money, enable for him to walk and to sort of free that up. They replaced him with John Singleton, which, doesn't inspire a ton of confidence. You're going to potentially lose a player that's been, somewhat of a franchise face in Alex Bregman. And I think in many ways has kind of led that locker room. Jose Altuve is going to be another year older. He's 34, he'll be 35 next season. And you're kind of hanging your hat on Yordan Alvarez, but he's not necessarily going to have the protection that he's had in recent years. The starting pitching is fine. They obviously have some players that could come back next year and Luis Garcia and others. But there's a lot of murky health questions just across this rotation. And I'm sure if you asked the Astros 2 years ago if they expected Spencer Arrighetti to be a major part of their rotation. Ronald Blanco, like I said, has been a great story, but he was a reliever until a few years ago and they made a transition there. I think it's definitely set up to, potentially bottom out in the next couple of years. We'll see how aggressive they are in free agency and bringing some players in. They have been aggressive in spending money, just not necessarily on the right players. And I think just with ownership and some of the things you've heard with the front office, there's definitely some questions that sort of linger heading into next year. So if I put my money on them, sliding back a little bit next year and the following year, I think that would probably be the smart money.
Obviously, the biggest criticism that is just clear is criticism of ownership. I mean, when there was a period of time there where James Click was gone, and before they hired Dana Brown. And when you talk about the Jose Abreu move, Rafael Montero move, they had to eat a lot of money now in truly terrible free agent contracts that were contracts that were signed when they didn't have a GM. And it's one of those things where I do worry a little bit, when you see this, that you – good ownership is vital. I think good ownership of an MLB team is really kind of a hidden factor in teams that succeed versus teams that don't. But at the same time, good ownership also generally stays out of the way, and that didn't feel like that was necessarily the case. And the Astros have suffered from that. And like you said, it's not just that they suffered because they ate money. Jim Crane has enough money to eat those contracts. But at the same time, it also has left them where they're a little thinner at some of these positions, because if you sign Jose Abreu to a free agent contract, you're kind of not covered. You're not planning to be covered there otherwise. And like I said, that's where John Singleton comes in, because they needed someone to step up at that position. But you look at this overall, that the other thing, like you said, this is an organization that has done a good job of kind of producing solid big leaguers in recent years, even among guys who, kind of weren't extremely highly ranked. But I do look at it right now and say, there's one top 100 prospect here. There are guys who project potentially as regulars, but you said like you the top five. I do feel like that once you get past the top five here, that's where this system really ranks poorly compared to most other organizations. Because if you talk to scouts who have, you know, seen the Astros teams, especially in the lower levels, there's a lot of like, wow, there's just not much here. And that's the difference, because the thing that really did stand out, yes, there was the highest of the Jordan Alvarez trade. There was drafting Kyle Tucker, drafting Alex Bregman, guys like that. But on top of that, it was producing. No one did a better job of producing pitching at low cost in the international market than the Astros did. You know, so things like that, where you talk about the Luis Garcias, the Framber Valdez, as we could go down the list, they've done a lot of that. There aren't many of those arms right now. There are not that. I'll put it this way, before we move on to the next one, because again, you do the system. I don't see those international arms where you're like, oh, where did this guy come from? There aren't those guys right now, are there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one that kind of popped up this year that's interesting, rocketed from off the top 30 onto the top 30. That's Anderson Brito. Started the season in the DSL. He's actually a $10,000, kind of a classic Astro story. $10,000 signing in 2023 out of Venezuela. Maybe a little bit older for an international signee, but pitchers can tend to skew a little bit older sometimes. His stuff took a huge jump forward this year. Was sitting, you know, 90 miles an hour a year ago, now sitting 95 to 96 with, you know, good movement, you know, a lot of ride and arm side run, low 80s sweeper, you know, an upper 80s change with really good shape on it. He's throwing a good amount of strikes. He pushed all the way from DSL to FCL to full season ball. So he's a guy that's kind of rocketing up the list. But outside of that, you know, we've been looking for someone like a Limber Sansa to really take a big step forward. That hasn't happened. It's really been more of the American draft picks between like rounds 3 and 7 that have sort of popped in the system over the last
year. Gettys, Jake Bloth.
Yeah, exactly. Those type of arms have really been the players that have been more interesting, I think. And, you know, that kind of shows that maybe there's less of investment there. It's also the international market, and sometimes these classes don't necessarily hit. But I'd say Brito is one that you can kind of call out and say, all right, there's a kind of a classic low bonus Astros development story here that's, you know, rocketed up the list. So it's not altogether empty, but I think when you see the backfields, I wasn't there that this year, but was the previous 2 years, the cupboard was a little bit bare. There weren't any arms where you're really like blown away in terms of like, this guy's going to come stateside and really perform. We haven't really seen that.
Okay. So now I'm going to put the tough question to you. If we're talking about, I'm starting out alphabetically here with the two, I would say, thinnest organizations, farm system wise, among these five. Angels versus Astros, who are you taking?
I'm still taking the Astros. I just have a very low level of confidence in the Angels. I think that, you know, we talk about outside of the top five, it's not that exciting. You know, I guess with like Ben Joyce at 8, that's interesting. He'll probably graduate, I imagine, at some point, maybe later this season. They have some interesting arms kind of littered throughout. Like Chris Cortez this year was a pick that has huge stuff, maybe ends up in the bullpen long term, but kind of an interesting player. I just look at the overall development within the Angel system going back really a decade at this point, and there's just not that inspires confidence where even if player for player, kind of when they come into the organization, you may like an Angels player a little bit more. You're probably the smart money once again is probably on betting on the Astros developing it. So I think I lean the Astros, but I mean we're talking about the dregs of sort of the top 30s here.
So Christian Moore is already in Double-A, to the surprise of probably no one at this point, because this is what the Angels do. They take a first rounder, they move him rocket fast. They did it with Nolan Shanuel. They did it with Zach Neto. This is what they do. Christian Moore, I think we would at this point be surprised if he's not in the big leagues this year. I'll just ask you, does that make sense to you, the way they're doing this? Is there an upside to this, or is there more downside than upside in your opinion?
You know, I feel like it's probably more downside. There's not many players that I think are just ready straight up to handle the rigors of the major leagues and facing major league pitching, or it's mostly been position players. So I don't think I have to go into the pitching side of things. You even saw with like Wyatt Langford and some of these other guys that we thought were ready-made. There were some struggles initially, and I think we see that a lot with prospects, and especially the less time that they have in the minor leagues. We kind of saw this a few years ago with the White Sox when they rocketed up Andrew Vaughn to the big leagues. And, you know, Vaughn has never been the player that we thought he was going to be. Maybe that was always going to be the outcome. But you have to wonder if there were things that he could have worked on in less of a pressure cooker sort of environment, the type of player he would have been. I think in some ways they kind of did the same with Nick Madrigal. And then you look at Zach Nato, and I think there's upside with the bat. He's always been a good defender. He's a good all-around player. But you have to wonder if, you know, maybe that full year in the minors might have done him some good. We've talked about Nolan Chanuel. You know, overall, I think it's just still underperforming, frankly. He's another guy that in another organization, they might have, you know, coaxed a little bit more power out of him, a little bit more fly balls out of him, found a few more barrels just with, you know, proper coaching and instruction and time really spent on development and not so much worrying about, hey, what's this guy doing in the big leagues? And I think there's an adjustment for a lot of these guys. And you're talking about Moore's a little different because he came out of the best conference of college baseball, played there for 3 years, you know, on one of the best teams, and has faced some great pitching. He's faced major leaguers that are in the major leagues right now. But I think you look at Chanuel and you look at Nato and you say, these guys came from mid-major conferences. They weren't necessarily facing that sort of quality consistently. Some extra time in Double A and Triple A, I think, would have done good. The other thing that's strange, and we sort of saw this with the recent acquisition of George Klassen, I thought he had mastered the low A level. They sent him a low A. They seem to avoid high A and seem to avoid Triple A for their true prospects. It's just a very weird setup. And I think it's good for the player because they get to free agency a little bit earlier, but they have to be successful enough to sort of garner those dollars once they do get onto the open market. So I can see some positives from it from a player perspective, but I think overall in terms of development and getting the best out of the talent that they've acquired, they haven't done a very good job of that. And therefore I'm kind of against the process, but I think until we have some more hard numbers, it's tough to say if it's wrong or right.
So, yeah, when I look at Chanuel, for instance, I know he had a much better July. You know, there are some positive signs there. Let's just say that he's starting to figure it out. Like, right, okay, so he's figuring it out. And so in 2025, you get the first really successful big league year for Nolan Chanuel. Again, when I say successful, he's holding his own now. He's always gotten on base. He got on base last year. But you are expecting a little bit more thump out of your first baseman than what they got, especially last year. But if that's the case, then what did the Angels get by, you know, again, it's great for the player because he's going to hit free agency at 27, you know, before 28, you know, instead of 30, 31. But if you're the Angels, does burning a year and 45 days of service time before he figures it out in the big leagues, is that really all that useful for you? Like, if you're looking at this and saying, okay, especially on a team, I know that, really, at the core of it, I feel like that the Angels' biggest problem, and this is a little bit understandable, especially when they had Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, is you have ownership there who is never going to be willing to say, this is the year that we need to pull back and kind of build for the future. There's no better example of that than the fact that how much better would this farm system look if instead of trading away Kai Bush and Edgar Quero, they had acquired a ransom for Shohei Ohtani last year at the deadline. I mean, we've been talking about a whole different farm system here. Because let's just be clear, Edgar Quero and Kai Bush, if they were still Angels, would rank 2 and 3 on this list, 1 and 2. You know, they're right there with Caden Dana as the best players. They'd be among the best players in the system, right?
Yeah. I think, like, you look back on last year's deadline and it's like, guys, what were you thinking? Like, there was no shot that team was going to make a deep run. They hadn't put together, you know, sustained winning since, you know, the early years of Mike Trout. And I think just from a team building perspective, they had some big contracts that they kind of have to eat still in terms of Anthony Rendon and others. But if they had traded Trout a few years ago, when there was, you know, some clamoring for that, when his value was at peak, they would have gotten a ransom. Look what the Nationals got back for Juan Soto. They could have done the same thing last year with Shohei Ohtani. And, you know, I think if they had traded him in early July, somewhere in that range, that kind of set the market, there would have been so many players available, the amount of teams that would have been in on Ohtani, the same thing with Trout. And they just haven't really maximized their opportunities or window. I even feel it's similar at this trade deadline. They made a good deal with the Carlos Estevez deal. They got back a couple of interesting arms from the Phillies. But just why not trade Taylor Ward? Why not trade Luis Rengifo? Why not trade Tyler Anderson, especially when it was such a seller's market? They may not get a top 100 prospect, but this is an organization that needs to build depth. And I think that we've seen the teams that have been able to get over the hump, they've built that internal depth and they've been able to find success like that. The Rangers went out and they spent a ton of money in free agency. At the same time, they had organizational depth built over a couple of years and were able to then go out and supplement that roster with sort of secondary pieces, trading away to Roby, trading away a Thomas to JC, et cetera. And I think we've seen with the Orioles and, you know, a lot of these teams, the Astros in their heyday, the Cubs when they were winning, building up that organizational depth and getting those top end guys and developing them really is the way to win in baseball.
The Angels have been the epitome of stars and scrubs. And part of the problem for the Angels is their stars get hurt sometimes, especially Mike Trout now, unfortunately. But on top of that, their scrubs are worse than anyone else's scrubs. Their scrubs are the scrubs who don't have anywhere else to go. I mean, they are the last refuge for players who Miguel Sano was not playing for anyone else in the big leagues this year. I think that's just straight away. We know Cole Tucker famously was basically becoming a coach. And then they're like, hey, you want to play for us? Nico Goodrum. There's a number of players who you're like, Keston Hira is still around playing for the Angels before being DFA. The number of players who you look at and say, okay, when we talk about depth, when you talk about the Rangers in depth, well, one of the things they did is when they acquired, you know, when they built this middle infield through free agency, with Seager and Semien, that meant that the guys that they had acquired, Duran, Josh Smith, became kind of super subs. And that was useful for them to have super subs. They were able to get to a point where Leody Taveras was kind of like a center fielder slash super sub. And that's where we're talking about depth. The Angels just keep having to throw out guys who really are, you know, they're replacement level players or below that in some cases. And that's really hard to win with because the injuries keep popping up. I look at this. I mean, the scary thing for this Angels team right now is when I look at it is Neto, Shaniel, like I saw they said, like, you know, Ron Washington, again, you have to say positive things about your own team. I get it. It's like, we know that we'll have Shaniel, we know we'll have Neto, we know we'll have Mickey Moniak. I will give you the first two on that, and I'm still a little bit sketchy on the first baseman who doesn't really hit for power among that group. Sure. But I'm not trying to pick on Mickey Moniak, but if you're saying that you're building around Mickey Moniak, you're in trouble right now.
Yeah.
That's another way to put it. But
yeah, I mean, I think you look at this roster and it's like, wow, I forgot that Willie Calhoun was their cleanup hitter. You know, I like Willie Calhoun, I think I saw playing Double-A as, you know, a 28-year-old last year. Carson Fulmer's actually been a nice surprise for them, but you know, he's in their starting rotation. There's some of these questions and just some of these names that you pull back up and it's shaky. And then they didn't make moves with players like Hunter Strickland and some of these other guys where they kind of found a little bit of a pot of gold and probably could have moved him for something. That's the strangest thing about this team is like, they're willing to give their first round picks opportunity in the big leagues immediately, but then some of their depth guys that maybe have performed in AAA, they don't give opportunities because they don't trade away some of the older vets that they have that maybe even have just some trade value, you know, just a little bit. I mean, you don't have to always be, you know, getting a top 200 prospect. You know, sometimes you make a trade like, the Blue Jays did, where they traded away, I think, Yimi Garcia and got back like RJ Schreck. And like, he's an interesting player, like just getting guys like that into the organization, building some depth, being more competitive at the minor league level, I think does have some value. And it's just wrought with mismanagement. And you can even go back to some of the other things that have happened off the field. And just, you know, even the ownership part of it, right? Like Artie Moreno was selling the team and then backed out of selling the team. Like, it's really hard to be an Angels fan. I would argue that.
It's really hard to also work for the Angels also, because again, it comes back to ownership at the end of the day. And I don't know another way to segue into the A's when we talk about ownership and the trouble of when you have, you know, when your ownership is part of the problem more than the Oakland A's. And I'm sure A's fans out there are going, yeah. And we'll cover that right after this quick break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging. You can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. I think we're going to have an opening coming open. When it comes open, I'm going to use Indeed. Why? Because Indeed makes my job easy. When I'm hiring, it puts it all in one place. It organizes, it does the thinking for me to where I can just connect with quality candidates and do the process that we need to do to hire. That's what Indeed does. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. The heat of summer is here. Whether you're going for a long run or just sitting by the pool, your favorite summer treat could be giving you extraordinary hydration. Liquid IV has refreshing summer flavors like Popsicle Firecracker and Rainbow Sherbet that hit the spot when you need transformative, hydrating relief all summer long. Indulge in hydration with electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients from the number one powdered hydration brand in America, Liquid IV. Did you know that blue and pink cotton candy are different flavors? I didn't until I started enjoying both of them through Liquid IV. Personally, I'm partial to the blue cotton candy. I make sure I pour some in my water bottle with some ice before I head out on a bike ride. It not only hydrates, but it's a more enjoyable way to stay hydrated. Blue cotton candy, that's my recommendation. But I've yet to find a Liquid IV flavor I don't like. Cool off your summer with the reimagined flavors of treats like Rainbow Sherbet and Popsicle Firecracker. Or make your own Liquid IV popsicles. Indulgent flavors keep your wellness rituals fresh and keep you motivated and hydrated. Find all your favorite flavors on the website. There's acai berry, lemon lime, pina colada. You can even choose from their line of sugar-free flavors like raspberry melon, white peach, and green grape. The white peach, that's pretty good too. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. It's powdered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Indulge in hydration this summer with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. Oracle.com/bandwidth.
And we're back. So speaking of owners who kind of have, I think that there are some green shoots. There are some positive notes about this Angels farm system. It all just kind of gets washed away by where are they going to play? Are they going to bake on 100 degree days on the turf in Sacramento next year? Is the ballpark going to get built in Vegas? All those things that obviously surround this team. But that being said, I do feel like when you look at the talent in the system, it's ticked back up a little bit. How do you see it, Jeff?
Yeah, and I even think you can look at the Major League roster, and there's some pretty good development stories for them. Lawrence Butler, if you know, not for Bobby Witt Jr., was just about the hottest player on the face of the earth in July. J.J. Bleday is going to be a multiple war player this year, and I think he was kind of written off. Brent Rooker has turned into, it took a little bit longer, but in All-Star, one of the better power hitters in baseball, a guy that still has multiple years of control left, though he is 29. They've had down years from guys like Zach Eloff, but I don't think Zach Eloff's career is sort of totally written off. J.P. Sears has been pretty good. Mitch Spence, who was a Rule 5 pick of theirs last year from the Yankees, has been a pretty good player for them. And they were able to trade away Lucas Ursig, who I think another good acquisition, a player that developed under their watch a little bit. They do have, Jacob Wilson, who when healthy, I think is one of the best young prospects in baseball. And especially from a real life standpoint, I think contribute a lot to both sides of the ball. And the system isn't altogether awful. So I think there's, I think there's more to like here than people may necessarily want to give them credit for. And they have been willing to make some of those deals to supplement the system. Maybe they didn't make the big deal with Mason Miller getting traded or, Brent Rooker. Well, but
they couldn't trade Mason Miller because he was hurt, unfortunately.
Yes. Though there were some people that totally didn't believe that story. Very bizarre. But yes, that was an interesting one. I wonder if they move him this offseason or if they continue to build. Because the top of the system, I think, has some really nice, exciting players. This is not a bad top 10 at all. And even littered throughout, 11 to 30, there's a lot of players where in a couple of years, if things go well, the talent is there. Steven Echevarria has interesting stuff. Gage Jump has interesting stuff. Brett Harris, maybe is more of like a fringy regular, but has shown, something with the bat at times. Will Simpson's kind of the same. Cade Morris is an interesting arm. I mean, there's a lot more players in the system than I think people realize. Ryan Lasco can't really hit, but is a standout defender in the outfield. And then the top of the system, they have some pretty interesting athletes. I kind of like this top 10, frankly.
I would say that there's a lot of risk to it in some ways. There's like a mix, right? So Nick Kurtz, there's not a whole lot of risk, but it's like it's going to be okay. Is he going to be okay or is he going to start? We talked about Andrew Vaughn earlier. Like you want him to kind of – you're hoping that he breaks the curse of top-of-the-draft college first baseman, which has been just – brutal in recent years, I think it's fair to say. Spencer Torkelson, Andrew Vaughn, you could just go down the list, really. But you got guys like that, and then you got guys like Henry Boldy, who, if it all breaks right, could be really good.
Yeah.
And then you throw in, but again, like Tommy White, again, I thought they had an interesting draft. I'm not sure that I'm a giant fan of the way they approached it, but they're going to get guys out of that. Like Tommy White can hit. Now, we'll see how much impact he has. We'll see where he plays defensively. But it would be shocking if Tommy White goes to pro ball and just, like, hits 220 and looks lost at the plate. Because this guy was a really long track record of being a good hitter. Max Muncy's had a lot of injuries this year. And he also, like, you're always trying to figure out what the guys were in Vegas is how much is they're having good years, how much of it is that they're in Vegas. Colby Thomas just had a great week, but it's like, okay, he had a great week where it was Vegas versus Albuquerque and they averaged 10 runs a game because they're playing in Vegas. And you're like, okay, he had a really good week, but we're talking about run environments that are out of this world, which is where they're trying to get to. Is this playing in Vegas to play and run environments that are kind of out of this world? But yeah, there's Denzel Clark, Joe Boyle still, I don't know what to make of him, but there could be something there. And they have filled out that they've made enough trades that this system should have some depth. Let's just be clear. They've been bad long enough. If you keep trading off guys, they're not going to hit on all of them, but you should get something out of when you get a Mason Barnett. You get there's just a run of these guys who they've brought in. A lot of them haven't turned out to be that much yet, but there's still something here. But how much do you think that the overall situation of the A's is going to weigh on them, not just from a development standpoint, but just from a player standpoint? Like this, it's not going to be as easy to excel as an A as it is to excel in an organization where everything's a lot more stable, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for guys to, you know, necessarily buy in and want to stay there for the long term. Maybe that changes if they do end up in Vegas in a couple of years. Maybe there's more money poured into the organization, but that's a tale that's been around since Moneyball in terms of, you know, guys having to pay for, you know, drinks in the locker room type of thing. So, and they've had some success. I mean, we're not that far removed from the Matt Olson, Matt Chapman teams that, you know, made playoff runs and were above average major league clubs and teams that were very watchable. I look at this system. I look at some of the young players that they have. I like Colby Thomas, I think, more than you do. I like him.
I don't like him as much as you, but I like him.
Yeah, he's tooled up. You know, they've actually gone after high upside players. Louis Morales has great stuff. Made the hot sheet this week. He's the kind of guy that I think, like, there aren't many pitching prospects that come from the international market that kind of immediately have some impact. And you're like, all right, I can see this guy in a couple of years being up in the big leagues. You mentioned Bolte, you mentioned Muncy, Darryl Hernandez. It was a good acquisition for them. And where they got Tommy White in the draft, I'm totally fine with. I didn't like Tommy White as a top 15 pick, but Tommy White, you know, where they selected him, totally fine.
Going Kurtz White as your kind of base of your draft is like you're going very similar in your demographics, I guess is what I would say.
They have Wilson, they have Thomas, they have Bolte, they have Denzel Clark, they have JJ Bleda. I mean, like they have players that have tools within their organization, whether it's in the system or up at the major league level. There's a way that this can all sort of congeal together in a few years and turn out to be a pretty interesting team. So I think I look at this team and I look at the White Sox who sort of went downhill at similar times. I have more confidence that the A's can be a good team. We talked about it yesterday. There aren't the reinforcements in the White Sox system. I think you look at the Athletics and you say, I think they're in a better spot than the Angels and a lot of other teams. And you just have to hope that maybe there's some more direction from the top and that things get settled a little bit. I don't think they're bad talent evaluators, frankly. I think they've done an okay job of that. Development, maybe a little bit of a different story, but I think you can say that for about half the teams in baseball. And there's a lot of development stories that get out there, I think, sometimes that can be a little bit of an eyewash when you start to talk to players and, you know, the type of stuff that they're doing. And it's maybe billed one way and then sort of perceived internally differently. So we'll see. You know, I don't cover the Athletics myself. You know, that's Mark Chiarelli that handles that. But I always go over the system with Mark because I oversee it when we update the 30s. And I think we always kind of come away being like, I don't hate the system. There's players here that I really like. And they have a good mix of, you know, skill guys like a Kurtz or a White who can hit. And then some of these tooled up players as well. And frankly, I think I get to eat crow on Jacob Wilson. He's been a great pro so far. Got up to the big leagues, can play some shortstop. He certainly can hit. You know, is he going to win an MVP award? No. But I think could potentially be an all-star for a few years. And there's maybe some more impact in the bat to come just simply because he's 6'3", 190. I mean, he's not small. It's not like we're talking about a Nick Madrigal where he's tiny.
He's what Nick Madrigal was hoped to be.
Yeah, it's what people wanted Nick Madrigal to be. Exactly.
He can play short. They hope Madrigal can play short. He couldn't. His contact skills are elite. but he hits the ball hard enough for that to matter. Those two things were the things that derailed Nick Madrigal from being regular.
Yeah.
Jacob Wilson doesn't have those issues. But, okay, so now we are going to the opposite of the spectrum as far as farm systems, because Seattle's up next. And this has not been, I would say, a great year for the Mariners. It's been a fine year, but, like, offensively, it's been a surprisingly poor year. They really haven't had, besides Cal Raleigh, it's kind of hard to point to the hitters for them who've been kind of the carry the team kind of guys. Julio Rodriguez has battled injuries a lot and had some periods of ineffectiveness. You go down to the minor league system, though, and I really like it. I will say, though, there's a lot of risk here to me, because it's still a lot of guys who, a lot of them have made the jump to high A, but it's a number of guys who are still several steps away from the big leagues. But when you talk about a system that has Cole Emerson, Lázaro Montes, Johnny Formello, Cole Young, Keldon Celestin, Logan Evans, who was a pop-up prospect this year, like, there's a lot here to like. Is this a top-tier farm system to you, Jeff, or is this more of a mid-tier farm system?
I think just because of the talent at the top, and they've done a good job high in the draft, they've done a good job of uncovering some gems later in the draft as well. Logan Evans is a big one. You know, we've talked to a ton of scouting departments that were like, we didn't have this guy even turned in. I mean, I think it's maybe 8 or 9 at this point I've spoken with. They were like, yeah, we need to have a report on him. And then the things that they've done in the international market consistently. They draft really well. I mean, I would argue that my favorite pick in the 2024 draft was Ryan Sloan. I thought they got a deal there. I think the upside is huge. Guys that scouted him for other teams in the Midwest loved him. One comment that I've gotten, I used it yesterday on the fantasy podcast, but I had one scout say that he could throw a marshmallow through a battleship. Like, just one of the best lines that I've heard from a scout in a long time. But that's like, that's legitimate stuff. And they do a good job of coaxing more out of guys like that too. And I even look later in the system, there's a guy like, you know, Brandon Garcia, who made our hot sheet this week. He's been really good. You know, that's a guy that they got almost as like a forgotten player in the 11th round, who's in double A and pitching really well, a lefty with, you know, a sinker and a slider and good stuff. Teddy McGraw, if he can stay healthy, I think has always had the ability to be a really good prospect. Even a guy like Ryan Bliss, they've gotten some value out of him this year. I just think overall, this is just a good development program that players come in one way and come out another way. And they've done it on the fly pretty quickly. Bryce Miller turned into a really good player pretty quickly. They just do a good job of identification. And I think they do a good job of identification that meshes with their player development. They know the traits to go after. They know the type of players that their player dev group is going to be able to get more out of. And for me, I think this is the model of player development. Just because of how well they've done with it, how many players have come to the major leagues, and they've done something with pitching that's just hard to do. It's hard to consistently churn out starters who are good, that are rotation pieces. They've done it, and I think they got some more on the way as well.
The thing I look at is if you're talking about kind of overall the big picture, this is the team that has a foundation at the big league level that they can count on for years to come. Because you said that starting pitching. Starting pitchers can get hurt. We fully acknowledge. But when you have Kirby, Gilbert, Wu, Miller, as kind of a foundation of like, okay, Castillo. I don't want to leave out Castillo. Like, that's a great start where you're like, okay, even if one guy's down at any time, we have more frontline guys than almost anyone. Okay, you start there. Then you say, okay, well, what about beyond that? Well, you have Cal Raleigh, you have Julio Rodriguez, you have J.P. Crawford, you have up the middle guys who you say, again, we can just count on not just this year, but for years to come again. Then you just say, well, how do we fill in around them? And that's where they don't need a Cole Emerson. They don't need a Lázaro Montes. They don't need these guys to be stars from the day they arrive. They just need them to fit in with a team that already has guys who should kind of be carrying that weight. That's what you want. I mean, that's where I do look at this and say, in a division where we talked about that, you know, the Angels, we don't know where they're going. The A's are obviously kind of still trying to climb back up and face a lot of uncertainty. And the Astros are, I would say, even the most optimistic Astros fan would look at it and say, yeah, we're heading in a decline phase considering the state of this roster. And Texas is also older than Seattle. This still should be a team that is here this year and for several years to come. But now the question is going to be, with a lot of these, again, these minor leaguers who are still several steps away, is a Ford or an Emerson or a Farmello who's coming back from a knee injury that unfortunately cost him, you know, this second half of the season. They trade away guys. I mean, they trade away the interesting guys like an Aiden Smith, the Brody Hopkins, guys like that. But I felt like that there were guys that they absolutely could trade away because they have a lot. They have other guys who are every bit as good as the guys that they traded away, I guess, is the way I would call
it. Yeah, and they're currently in first place, almost kind of quietly. You know, I think there were some comments made by DePoto this offseason, and that kind of upset the fan base. But I think you look at what they've done internally, the way this organization was perceived 4 or 5 years ago is very different than how it's perceived over the last 2 years. And I just feel like there's a lot to like. And they have tradable assets. They have obviously a first place major league roster right now. And this is about as loaded of a top 10 as you're going to see.
But we're going to move on to the last team because Jeff's got a chat as we do this. And I've already promised him we'd be done by two for his chat. And we're going to be bleed over on that just a little bit. But the Rangers farm system, I'd say, is thinner than it's been, but it's still, there's some guys I really like here. And on top of that, They're a team that when you say, okay, well, why is it thinner? Well, they did just graduate two outfielders who could easily still be in the minors. And if they were, the system would look a lot different in Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford. They still have a guy like Sebastian Walcott at the top of the system who's really kind of was thrown in the deep end by being sent to high A at his age. But he didn't drown. He's kind of figured it out, and he's kind of gotten better and better as the season's gone along. Kumar Rocker's back on the mound. Emiliano Kyoto, who we saw at the Futures game, was probably as good an arm, as impressive an arm at the Futures game as pretty much anyone. But when you look at this, is this a system that has some pieces to trade, or are there potentially some foundational pieces here to you, Jeff?
I think there's a little bit of both. I think you look at the arms, and I think there's a lot of guys here that can fit into major league roles, whether it's as a reliever or as a starter. Players have gotten better. Their identification process has been good. Alejandro Rosario, I think, was a guy that was a little lost at Miami. They saw some changes and some things that he did when he was in the Cape Cod League for a short stint and said, hey, like, we could change this guy's approach in terms of being less fastball heavy. And we've seen the results. I mean, he's now fifth in this system. They have guys, like you mentioned, like Winston Santos, Teodoro. Kumar Rocker, I think, is probably even underrated in our top 10 just based on what the early return.
He should move up again now because
he's a potential prospect, frankly. Like, he's looked really, really good. And it's a health concern, but I think that pick, the further we get away from it, it doesn't look like that bad of a pick at the top of the draft. They've had some things that haven't worked out too. I think you can certainly point to Brock Porter and how much he struggled as a professional and say, hey, now, that was a guy that everyone kind of thought was a slam dunk arm, but there's a lot of arms in this system. They do really well in the international market. They're willing to spend money in the international market. And I think if you look at their major league roster and particularly their lineup, there's not a lot of holes to fill over the next 2 years. So there's some time, some runway for some of these younger prospects like Walcott, et cetera, to kind of get up to speed and be ready when they need to sort of backfill. Finding young controllable pitching is not easy. They've leaned into that. I think if you look at Winston, you look at Teodoro over the last year, those are two arms that frankly have gotten better. And it's been direct changes that were pushed by the organization in terms of, how the fastballs were gripped, et cetera. They've added ride onto Winston Santos's fastball. They've gone to more of a sinker with Teodoro. And the results have followed. So it's hard to argue with that. I don't think they're on the Mariners' plane of development or the Rays or the Dodgers, but I think it's gotten better. They've invested in analytics, and they've done a good job of really being competitive and in the conversation of like sort of the top 10 in each sort of segment that we look at when we look at organizations, whether it's major league competitiveness, the depth of your farm system, and then development side of things, analytical side of things, they're kind of in the mix with all of it. And, you know, the first championship came for a reason. And I think it's because there's been a commitment to sort of, I wouldn't say excellence seems a little extreme, but there's been a commitment to doing things the right way.
You mentioned Porter, and with Porter, it's kind of hard to know where to rank him because he really did look promising last year. And then this year is a truly lost season where he completely lost the strike zone, field for throwing strikes. You hope he makes it, gets it back, but there are no, I would say that so far there aren't really any positive signs on that yet. That kind of leads me to ask about the other prominent pitching prospect who is kind of now split back under the radar, I think, a little bit, but is there still hope in your mind for Jack Leiter? Or, you know, it's been, he came up for a stretch, three starts, I think it was, at the big league level, got shelled, went back to the minors. And I would say it's been more consistent this year, but it also, when we say more consistent, there's still a lot of those moments where it just seems like with him to me that when Leiter loses the feel for the zone, things get ugly quickly for him. There's kind of a less margin for error with him than maybe I feel like with a lot of starting pitchers. But when he's on, there's still stuff there that's really kind of interesting and impressive in my mind.
Yeah, I think it's ticking more toward the reliever side of things when we look at Leiter and, you know, we sort of look at, all right, like he's never really been able to sustain his stuff and his strike throwing consistently for 2 months as a starter, really ever as a professional. I do think over an inning, maybe 5 to 6 outs, this guy has the ability to let it fly a little bit and the stuff eat. And he has gotten to a point where I think like that's an actual legitimate consideration, you know, maybe later this year or going into next year. We'll see. I think things look better than they looked a year ago. That's for sure. Better than they looked 2 years ago. So he's headed in the right direction. But as you said, finding consistency for him has been such a struggle. But I think, you know, maybe if you put a little less responsibility on him, only asking him to go out and get you 3-4 outs, I think he can really succeed in that role. And, you know, that's something that certainly still has value. It just may not be what you wanted it to be, you know, when he went second overall in the draft.
No, that's obviously, that would be a disappointment considering the where he went, considering what he did in college. But at the same time, you know, it's still something. It's not nothing, but at the same time, you obviously want more than that. I do feel like that there is some depth here. At the same time, you know, this is not the system it was a couple years ago, because again, they graduated guys. But it does feel like a team that, especially with the, if they're willing to keep spinning, this is the team to me that at the big league level, they're going to have to filter in an arm or two. And I think that you mentioned a couple of these guys who could be those arms, but they're also going to have to be willing to sustain a pretty high spending level, partly because they've already spent on the Corey Seegers, the Marcus Semiens. But on top of that, I don't feel like that this farm system is ready to say, okay, we can plug whatever holes you have. And if we don't have a player ready to do that, there's enough ammo here to trade for whatever we need. I think it's more of like, they need to be a mixture of free agency and development to fill holes, because they are having some holes created, partly because I get it, but they went expensive, you know, on the pitching side. They went older veterans on the pitching side, which really paid off for them in 2023. But there are some holes that are kind of being created over the next couple of years because of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of the nature of the beast. But you sort of look at what they have. They still have some young players. They haven't gotten, you know, they more or less have a lost year for Evan Carter this year. The struggles early with Wyatt Langford. You know, they've obviously had to deal with those injuries. They have some, you know, some pitchers coming back. I think Tyler Molly actually makes his first start for the organization today as we're recording this. Jacob DeGrom should be back next year. We'll see how healthy he is. So there's still a lot of depth here, and the team overall has been willing to go out and make aggressive moves. So even if, you know, Marcus Semien is getting a little bit older, you're not all that worried about that. You know, Corey Seager's still 30, 31, 30 this year, 31 next year. Josh Jung, you know, despite always being injured, only going to be 27 next year. You know, Adolis Garcia's ticked back a little bit, but I think you're kind of playing with house money with that one. But you're talking about players here that are like corner outfielders, first baseman, like that's kind of where the holes are. Those players are easy and fairly cheap to acquire on the open market. So kind of the up the middle positions have been less of a concern for them, and they have pitching and they have some pitching depth. So I think that's kind of what's interesting with this team. It's just a matter of, you know, will DeGrom come back and be the top of the rotation guy? Is Kumar Rocker going to be a healthy starter for the next 2 to 3 years? You know, can Leiter provide something to the major league club? You know, can Tioto and Winston Santos build off of strong years and, you know, maybe make the jump to the big league rotation next year and, you know, just kind of hold down that 4 or 5 spot so they're not starting, you know, Jose Urena? I think that's the biggest questions for me. But at the same time, you have to look at the organization, have some confidence in Chris Young's group that this team will go out there and they'll make deals that they need to make to be competitive. And I think that's the most that you can ask from ownership and the front office.
So that is the AL West. We are now three divisions down, three divisions to go. We have the NL still to go. Keep it here, the Baseball America podcast, also the Baseball America YouTube channel. And we're going to keep rolling through these one a day. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we may stay with that schedule. So you may have to wait a few days for the next of these. But we're going to keep them coming. And we hope you're really enjoying our kind of, we can't BA call these deep dives because we're spending 7 to 10 minutes per org. And a deep dive for us is 2.5 hours per org. But these reviews of kind of where these systems are. So thank you again for the download. Please like and subscribe, whether you're on YouTube or your favorite podcast provider. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.